All right, it's the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. It's 2017. And if you're like some of us at BA, New Year rolls around and you're all like, man, I'm going to bring my lunch to work. And you do it for about a week and then you just kind of stop because like you just don't know what to bring. You got no ideas. But you know who does have ideas? Carla Lolly Music, our food director, and our senior designer, Elena Sullivan, who is one of those persons. You walk by her desk and she's got the cool ceramic bowl with grains and interesting vegetables and condiments. So I talked to Carla and Elena, get some ideas, some thoughts, some pointers on how to sort of up your lunch game at your desk. And then David Tamarkin, editor of Epicurious, joins us to talk about this cool new video series they made called The Answer is Cooking, about how you cook can make a positive impact on the environment, save energy, and all that good stuff. But right now, let's talk lunch al desco with Carla and Elena. All right, guys, I am a firm believer in the sort of artisanal desk lunch. I endorse it. We preach it in the magazine, and yet I never, ever do it myself.
That's because you have a giant kitchen at your disposal, one flight below.
That is true. We do have a test kitchen here at Bon Appetit. But even I worked for 10 years at GQ, and I always liked the notion of sort of bringing a smart lunch, and I would see people who did it, and I was like, wow, they're so together, and it looks healthy, and it looks actually delicious, and they have these cool little containers. And yet I never could really figure it out. And yet here, Carla, at Bon Appetit, I look at someone like Elena here, and you are one of those persons who has it figured out. What's the secret?
I've gotten into the habit of bringing my lunch pretty much every day. And a lot of it, I think, is because I prepare myself the night before. So I cook dinner like almost every night that I'm home. And I go into it knowing that I want to have leftovers for lunch, like without having to think in the morning. So I'll be cooking. I live alone, but I usually cook for 4 to 6 people. And
would you have like a pop-up in your apartment or something?
I could.
Every night you've got
no,
a party?
No, I mean, not every night, because I'll usually...
Wait, Carl, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been invited to Elena's for dinner?
No, but I feel that viscerally I have been there.
Because I haven't been invited. And I think I've known her for 3 years or so. I don't know. Yeah. No, yeah. Just go ahead. Keep going. Yeah. Keep going. It's cool.
So, yeah. So I cook a lot in anticipation of having leftovers. And I like to have like a base, whether it's like a grain or, you know, big batch of like lentils or sweet potatoes. I'll roast like 6 at a time instead of just like 1 or 2.
You mentioned that. Well, it seems like that's rule number one is make leftovers.
Yeah. Leftovers shouldn't be a sad... The word leftover sounds like leftover.
Can we rebrand it?
Yeah. It's like pre-made building blocks.
Yes. Preemptive something or other. But you make that great point we were emailing earlier about it's just as easy to roast 6 sweet potatoes as it is 2.
It takes the same amount of time, right? But then
energy.
You have all of this awesome stuff. It's almost like think of it like a pantry. You would keep a pantry stocked. You need to keep the fridge stocked too.
Ooh, I like that. Right? Your refrigerator pantry?
It's like you're turning on the oven anyway, or you're cooking on the stove, and you might as well, you know, save yourself some time.
So you're running your pop-up over somewhere in Brooklyn. I don't know if it's legal or not, but you're having friends over. You're saying, I'm going to make twice as much farro or quinoa tonight because I know tomorrow I can then bring it. Carla, you also in Brooklyn, not running a pop-up, but running a family.
Basically, it's not a pop-up. It's actually like a 24-hour-a-day restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you one of those... Having kids and their schedule and just having to be more scheduled out, are you the type of person who is on like a Sunday, you sort of map out the week based on groceries or that sort of thing?
Not really.
No.
No.
Gosh.
And I have to say...
That was the wrong answer.
I know. Well, that's why I'm like really interested in this. So because for the last 10 years, I've been packing a lunch for my roommates, my underage roommates who live with us. And
often underappreciative. Well, my kid is just like, whatever.
They ruined our life and took all our money.
Yeah.
And like, they have really high demands. I love the guys. They're great. But anyway, this
year. They're fun to live with. They're just kind of a pain in the ass.
This year was the first year that both of them are eating at school. So it's been.
That must have been amazing.
Oh my God. Well, the mornings are like this incredible thing where you like.
You're like, I can read the paper.
Well, I made pancakes today. For Cosmo, and I made...
Wait, you made pancakes?
I made pancakes this morning, and I made a toad in the hole for Leo, which was, I have to say, perfectly cooked. So it was really, really nice. But I think with that in mind, because we were packing the kid lunch, like, I couldn't deal with making my own lunch. But for them, it was the same thing. Like, we had to have the fridge stocked with also a variety of things, because there's a chance that they'll decide when they open that up, like, I'm not in the mood for that. So I always tried to have like three or four different things in the
box. In your chill pantry.
And they don't have a microwave for the school lunch stuff. So a lot of it started being like, what will be good at room temperature? What might even be better? So then I was doing like quick pickle sort of carrots and stuff that if you ate them right away, it would just be carrots with a little lime juice and salt. But 3 hours later, they're really juicy and like the carrots
actually
have softened up and like stuff like that.
Well, so Elena, so all right, let's say, put this into context. So let's say you have chickpeas and rice.
Yeah.
What would you then add to that? Do they come to work together or do they come to work separately?
Well, it depends. Like sometimes I'll have already kind of married them the night before.
Okay.
So maybe they're already together.
They hooked up at your pop-up.
Yeah. And then I'll kind of have a lot of like seasonal vegetables on hand and like whatever I've done with those, you know, whether it's, spiced roasted carrots or some sauteed kale. Mm-hmm.
One thing I've noticed from looking at your Instagram feed where a lot of these dinners end up is that, and you said this the other day in another conversation we were having, your pantry is also kind of like a secret weapon. And Elena's always making these insane dressings that, you know, just sound bananas, like off the wall, but they'll have six or seven different things in them. But I feel like you go a lot to like a miso, lemon, sesame seed, maybe a nut in there. So there are these very sort of strongly flavored, you know, assertive, because cold food needs that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Like that's with cold food is that it loses its assertiveness and its saltiness and flavoring, and that you do have to sort of wake it up. And I think so. Let's say you have chickpeas or lentils and rice. You might have some roasted vegetables or sauteed greens. What I always like doing, which I think Meryl Rothstein, one of our editors here, does, and she's very good at lunch al desco, as we say, is then introducing some non-cooked elements in there. And whether it's fresh herb or maybe you have a chopped up cucumber or some sort of vegetable that is bright and crunchy and fresh. To give
I
you
love
that.
Having like some sauerkraut or a pickled thing, because that like gives it kind of the like
kimchi
zing.
Or something.
Yeah, love kimchi.
Wakes it up.
Yeah.
And crunch.
Yes, something for like crunch, like whether it's nuts or seeds.
And that's a good thing. And I think what's interesting, like I said, with people who do this well, there is a base, but then there's some assemblage when you get to work. Let's say if you're going to slice up a cucumber or you're going to add the nuts or seeds, you add those a la minute, as we would say, correct?
Another thing I equate this to that I do as a habit is like plane food follows
airplane
a lot of
airplane or plane?
Airplane.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Not
nondescript,
just plain.
Ordinary food.
It's kind of bland.
airplane food I never eat on the plane, and it's a lot of the similar things, but even on an airplane, flavors are even more muted. So even bringing a wedge of lemon, but not squeezing it until you open up that container. Or chopped herbs. I once did this and I was like, even for me, this is ridiculous, but I put the chopped herbs in a little separate, those little snack size baggies and like tucked that in the side of a grain salad. And then when I was on the plane, I like stirred the herbs in at the last minute and squozed the lemon over, and it just
You did not say squoze.
I did.
You've said that before on the podcast.
I believe in the word squoze. Some people like it. And it
Squozin', new hit movie from
So I squeezed the lemon over. But squoze just sounds, I don't know, it's
that
better.
Sounds more
it's mnemonic.
No, it sounds more is it past perfect. It was Squozen, you know, sort of. Is that past? I think that's past Pride, maybe. I don't know.
Well, it wanted to be Squozen. That's for sure. And it does. The people around you, whether your seatmate on the plane or I know all of your coworkers, Elena, who sit on either side of you, they'll like smell the fresh lemon and see the action going on and be like, ooh, I want that.
I think that's great. I do think, and like I said, I have done the sort of lunch out desco now and then, but like I said, I more just admire you guys. But I do think having that base, like let's say stewed chickpeas and some sort of like basmati rice. But then when you get to work, you've got your fresh herbs, you've got some sort of seeds or nuts for crunch, maybe some cucumber for freshness, then that fresh lemon and maybe like a dab of like labneh, some sort of yogurt-y, creamy thing
that's cold.
Yeah. You know. But speaking of cold, Carla, you were saying you do not believe in the microwave.
I just don't want to have to rely on the microwave. I don't own one, so I never think about it being available. And then I like the idea of the food coming to the right temperature by it.
So bring the we keep on talking about chickpeas and rice, but we're just that's our sort of model. But you bring that to work and do not refrigerate it when you get to work.
Because have you ever seen one of the refrigerators in those little kitchens?
Yeah.
They're disgusting.
Everyone who's any of you listeners out there, for you office people, and like, you know, you watch a movie Office Space and they all are kind of the same. And there's that person who's just standing in front of the microwave as it's going around in their little kitchenette, and you're just like, God, that is just like the picture of depressingness. And like the smell there, that microwave has those weird baked in smells of a million bad leftover soups and stuff. And
totally.
I just like to stay.
I would like to avoid it.
Yeah. It just zaps out all of your love that you put into it.
Totally.
Yeah.
The only time I use a microwave at work, and this is going to sound really insane, is when I'll microwave just a small amount of milk to put into my tea so the tea isn't cold. That's all it's good for.
That's the whole of the podcast. I hate when I get like a hot coffee. I like whole milk in my coffee. We've talked about this on another podcast. And I like really strong coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But with a decent amount of milk to get it to like a kind of like a craft caramel sort of color, you know? But if you put too much cold whole milk, then the whole temperature drops down. Then halfway through your cup, it's cold. Your coffee's not hot. So
it's a major league problem.
Always microwave the milk.
I agree with that. I also, won't get into thermoses and stuff like that, but it's a thing.
Yeah. Zojirushi, that's your
I
never.
I mean, you just never have to have a cold beverage ever again, unless you want it to be cold, in which case it will keep it cold.
It knows.
Would you use that for like things that you would want to have warm?
Yeah.
Like one of the things
that I've packed.
So just to explain, Zojirushi are these awesome Japanese thermoses that are all kind of cool designed, and they close up real nice.
They're like completely airtight. They have a couple little gaskets, which people might find annoying because you have to take them off and clean them. But it is the secret to why they're absolutely leak-proof. I've had mine fly out of my bag and fall on the concrete and roll, and like not a drip comes out.
How do you spell it?
Zojirushi. Zojirushi. And I mentioned them the other day. We were doing a Facebook Live about Test Kitchen Lunch. And we also, they make kind of the best rice cookers. But they are great because they have a cold food. You can't call it a thermos because that's a brand name. But they have a cold food storage jar that I used, or hot food storage jar, whatever, that I used a lot for the kids, because soup travels really well in them. And you can just make it hot at home, put it in that, and it will be hot later. No microwave. No spilling. And also, my younger son loved oatmeal for lunch, which I felt really fine about because it was like whole grains and protein and
that's interesting
him.
Like if you bring oatmeal to lunch, do you then give him a little fixings packet on the side to add, or do you
I just never had a small enough jar.
You just don't trust him.
Well, if I gave him a larger amount of maple syrup than I was comfortable having him put in, like forget it, he would literally drink it out of the thing.
So what would you add to it?
The usual, like milk, a little maple syrup. I always a lot of oats. He can eat a whole cup uncooked,
butter?
Which is like four. Sometimes a dab of butter in there.
You have to.
Float the milk on top so that when he gets there, he can start back up and it'll be nice.
You ever bring porridge, Elena? You might want to think about it.
I know.
Savory porridge.
I do it a lot for breakfast. So that'd be a little. Sometimes I bring the leftovers.
Nice. All right. So you have the chill pantry, AKA those sort of go to ingredients that you keep in your fridge. But do you also have a desk pantry?
I have a pretty deep desk pantry.
Let's talk about it. What's in there?
My pens get less real estate in it. Let's see. So I have things like a good salt and pepper just to, like, you know, finish off. Lemons I always have. Honey, olive oil, vinegars, usually like apple cider vinegar or rice vinegar.
Then
I have nuts.
Dried fruit?
Yeah, usually. What else?
Do you have any heat? Like anything spicy?
Yes, I have either like Aleppo pepper or some togarashi, the spice.
Japanese sprinkle. Yeah.
You know, I used to do this, now I recall, back at the old building at 42nd Street when my assistant was Emil Stonick.
Those were the days.
Emil was one of those guys who would bring his lunch a lot. And so we had a bit more of a pantry set up, but having...
He is also someone who would eat like a can of sardines outside of your
office. Yeah, he was a little weird.
I was going to joke.
When I have done lunch at my desk, and I do it here sometimes, it's usually, it's like it's kind of a cheat. Like I will go into the test kitchen. I will take a cucumber, chop that up. I'll go to the cafeteria where they've got rice and peas or something. And then I'll grab a hard-boiled egg. Maybe steal some fresh herbs. It'll kind of cobble something together, but it was nice. Then I'll go upstairs and I'll grab my malt and salt. I'll grab the good olive oil, drizzle that up. And it's then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is a tasty.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're like, I just made something, which is sort of more fun than, I think one of the things about eating lunch at work is that you look forward to it. Especially there was a time in my life before children that I like did this. And I felt like if I packed lunch and brought it, all I was thinking about for the first half of the day was when I would get to eat lunch. And then you open it up and it's like over so fast. So actually making it an occasion, and this is something that a couple other staffers do, is to not have lunch al desco at the desco. So like you go, you mix it together, and then get away from your desk, actually, like sit down and have that food like a human being, you know, finding a spot. You guys are good about getting outside.
I love going. I like to just pretend I'm having a picnic every day that I can.
Which I think is a reason that people don't bring lunch, is because that might be the one time in the day that you like get up from your chair and go outside and like have a break in the day. And if you bring your lunch, then you're like, well, now I'm just sitting here at my desk eating the food in front of the computer. Like, go somewhere.
I used to be better at that, and I need to sort of force myself.
Yeah.
Even if it's like the conference room where you can actually eat with other people and have a conversation.
Right. Nice. Go sit at someone else's desk.
What about, I think, like, wow, this is nice.
Hey, I'm going to have my lunch with you today. Is that cool? What are you working on?
I think also the vessel is important. That I find it depressing if you're eating out of the container which you transported your lunch in. I like to transfer it to be like Emma and I, we have some nice big, sort of soup bowls or sometimes a plate. It's just nice to put it on something else. What's your policy on that, Elena?
Totally agree. I knew your feelings about that as well.
I bet you have some beautiful ceramic sort of thing going on.
I have
on
some
there.
Bowl. I'm a big fan of eating out of bowls, so it kind of all, I either bring it in. I have some like kind of sturdier glass Tupperware type containers or just deli containers like the one you're drinking out of.
Yes.
Usually I have, you know, forks, spoons, chopsticks, a knife.
Let's talk chopsticks versus fork. Which one do you gravitate more towards?
Well, I love chopsticks because they force me to, like, slow down when I'm eating. But it totally depends on what you're eating, I think. Some things lend themselves better.
There's nothing sadder than a plastic fork, I think.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's terrible.
They're never big enough either. I like long, so long prongs on the fork and...
And the spoon's too small. Yeah.
Everything is wrong about it.
Oh. So I keep a proper fork that I stole from the cafeteria in
borrowed.
Borrowed from the drawer.
Was it from Uptown or?
I don't even know. I think you want a regular knife if you need it, but I think what I know Elena has when she cuts the lemons that she leaves out for 9 days, you also need like a proper sharp knife.
Yeah, I have a Leatherman in my little kit.
Elena, are you an Open L person?
Yes, that's the one I have. Just one of their, I think it's the number 8, like pocket, really simple.
And those are the cool, they're French, right? Open L French? Yeah, those cool sort of picnic knives with the wood handles that open up. Those are crazy sharp also.
Yeah, they stay really sharp.
They're carbon, I think.
And they kind of lock into place. They scare me a little bit, especially like when certain art, you know, like, designers just leave them lying around, up on a cutting board on their desk.
I'm getting ready to cut the next thing.
Yeah. I know it's cliche, but I still am a big fan of the hard-boiled egg. Not like the kind in the cafeteria, which they boil for 24 minutes and they're like chalky.
Yeah.
But if you get like a 9-minute egg, You don't want to like, you don't want to, obviously you don't, I don't think you want a, like a ramen egg where it's all gelatinous, but it's just underdone. So there's still tender in the middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do think when, you know, Elena is making these lunches that she doesn't invite us to join her at.
For the night before.
Or either. She doesn't invite us for either. She doesn't ask us to have lunch with her, or she doesn't invite us to the pop-up. But I do think, as you said, I think you need some sort of protein-y thing in there.
Definitely.
To go with, like, whether is just an egg that you slice up, or as you said, whether there's some chicken or smoked salmon or some. I need something.
Yeah. You do. Generally. And it keeps you full longer also.
Wait,
so
really?
Yeah. Protein is what satiates, and fat too. So you need those things in your life every day. That is what will keep you full.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've also learned as I've, did I tell you I'm seeing a trainer these days?
Yeah, you have mentioned it a few times.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell?
No.
What are you, really? Oh.
I can tell because you have your gym bag with you.
Oh, God. You guys are so mean.
I mean, you look great in your suit the other day. I think I noticed that.
Anyway, so that was because it was a nice
suit.
It's
a pretty fresh suit.
But no, I mean, I realized, so Damien, my trainer, was like, I was telling him what my sort of diet routine was. And he's like, it's obvious, but it's like, you need to be eating more regularly instead of like, you know,
big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was not eating enough breakfast. You know, I was eating an egg, but no carbs whatsoever. So by the time lunch rolled around, I was starved. And you don't want to be sort of botting them out because then you end up eating more than you should. But also the thing with lunch is that you have a lunch, but you don't want too big of a lunch because then you fall asleep at your desk.
Right.
But then, Elena, then all of a sudden it's like 4 o'clock and you're like, I'm kind of peckish right now and the pop-up doesn't open until 8 p.m. So what are you eating at 4 p.m.?
Well, some things I didn't mention that were in my pantry still are like...
How big is this pantry?
It's like a jar of like tahini or almond butter or something that I can spread on. Or, you know...
Spread on what?
Crackers or like an apple or...
Apple, that's nice. Do you have a favorite cracker?
You seem like a Wassa person.
Yeah,
Wassa crackers are so depressing. They're just like, hey, this is the driest, most unflavorful cracker known to man, but they're good for you.
You have to put like a whole avocado onto them.
I feel like I'm in like some weird health like resort sanatorium up in the Alps that I had to like hike to. And then they give me Wassa crackers after I burn 96,000 calories getting there.
We were having a fight in the kitchen the other day with Rick Martinez because he... took a very hard position against rice cakes. I personally love a rice cake.
I like rice, yeah.
See, rice cakes, I think for that 4 p.m. Jones, they are not good, but if you put like...
if you put something on,
we have like the organic natural peanut butter in there. I'll spread some of that on and then I'll do the drizzle of honey, a little sea salt.
Gotta do it.
And like that sort of gets me through to dinner. Because again, you don't want to come home to... I feel like I'm a nutritionist here. I'm breaking it down for you guys. Yeah. You don't want to come home starving.
No.
Because then you eat too much dinner. Yeah,
right.
Then you pass out.
Or that martini just goes straight to your head.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. So I think, eating sort of consistently. This is cool. Anything you're looking forward to in the winter months before we go, Elena, in terms of what you might be bringing to work?
Oh, yeah. I love the fall and winter. I love making like stewy dolls and chili.
Yeah,
a lot of Indian food and a lot of like root vegetables are going to be happening soon.
We're heading into the frozen tundra.
And those are ones you'll just roast on a roasting pan with olive oil and salt or?
Yeah, with like some coconut oil and cinnamon.
Coconut, wow.
Yeah, those are super delicious. And all kinds of, I love kabocha squash.
Love. Yes. So, we had some kabocha the other day.
Do we have a page in the magazine on kabocha? Do we do that or do we hold
did
that page?
We did that.
Yes. Is it October issue?
I think,
Is it October? Maybe it's November. Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah. It was October.
Yeah.
And we have it coming up on that in our healthy-ish issue. There's some beautiful steamed veggies, and kabocha steamed is so good.
I'll have to try that.
It's like good texture.
Elena, what's your Instagram handle so people can follow you?
It's Alasully, Alasully.
All right. And... pop-up start at, 8 p.m.? Get there at 7:30? What time, if people want to come?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how late you guys hold me here. No.
You need the secret number to buy the tickets.
Exactly.
There's a password.
Thanks for listening, guys. Hope this inspired you to bring your own lunch to work. Thank you, Carla, and thank you, Elena.
Thanks, Adam.
Ciao.
All All right. And now here is David Tamarkin from Epicurious talking about their new video series, The Answer is Cooking. Tamarkin, I did not know that the answer is cooking. No one told me.
To everything. Not just to this, to everything.
To everything. To all of life's
happiness, mental health, physical health. That's a whole other thing.
That's another podcast. But you guys over at Epicurious, our sibling, you did this cool video series called The Answer is Cooking that you narrate and created. And it's an animated series. It kind of reminds me, almost of those like educational Saturday morning cartoons when we were growing up, like how you make a bill, things like that, you know? Conjunction, junction, what's your function? No, there's no singing in these.
The idea actually was, how do we take something that's a little headier than we usually cover and get people to actually watch it?
How do you make it fun?
Yeah, how do we make it fun? Exactly. And I think they're really fun.
And they're short videos. They're about
60 seconds.
Yeah. You pack a lot of information into them. And you did five of them, each covering a topic, sort of food, environmentally sort of sensitive issues that we should all be more educated about, regardless of our dining habits or our political leanings or anything like that. We should know what's going on in the world. I thought they were really cool. They raised a lot of thoughts and questions for me. Can we just kind of run through them?
Yeah, sure.
Get your thoughts. The first one, water. We do use a ton of water in America, and you sort of boiled down to making pasta.
Yeah. Well, water is it's such a tricky issue. And when I was researching this, you get into all sorts of things like the water you use versus the water you use sort of virtually. I mean, in things like when you buy beef, you're using all sorts of water because of all the water that went into the production of the beef. I wanted to focus on something that you could see tangibly and really understand. When I use water the most is when I'm boiling pasta.
Yeah. Even your kid can understand. Hey, you can fill up a pot this big or you can fill it up halfway.
Yeah. And there's so much pasta being made. This was a very striking statistic when I did the math that, a family of four uses 100 gallons of water a year just on pasta alone, which is crazy. That's a lot of water.
And I would not be surprised if it's even more than that.
I think your household, it is.
I mean,
Bon Appetit loves pasta.
Yeah. America loves pasta.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. There was a piece that Harold McGee, food science guy, very well-known author, did in the Times a few years ago about what is the minimal amount of water you can use to successfully boil pasta.
Yeah.
And he did his based on a pound. Usually it's about, they suggest 4 quarts of water for a pound. He did it, got down to 2 quarts, did it even 1.5 quarts. And, at some point, the pasta is literally sticking out of the water, so you've got to sort of resubmerge it and stuff. What did you find? Did you personally test in terms of what works?
Yeah, the Epicurious Test Kitchen, we tested it. And we did, I'd read the McGee piece. Mm-hmm. This has been sort of talked about. It comes up every few years. People want to try it. And what I think prevents people from really going in and saying, okay, just boil your pasta in 2 quarts of water, is that people like Lydia Bastianich, who was quoted in that McGee piece, they're like, you can do it, but it's not quite the same. You lose something texturally. You lose something flavor-wise. The pasta doesn't have
Yeah, but that's also like an audiophile saying, if you don't have the $48,000 speakers and $5,000 turntable, you're not going to get the finer points of this music. And true, but the average person is not Lydia Bastianich, and the average family's not going to tell the difference.
Right.
You can still make good pasta.
I agree.
I thought it was also interesting, not only are you using half the amount of water to successfully boil pasta, you're also saving a lot of energy to bring that water to the boil.
Right, exactly, that's a really keen insight, which we did not put in the video, so you're just...
Because you only had 60 seconds.
Right. But that's very true. I mean, the energy consumption, the kitchen is the main energy hub in every home, and 16% of all energy consumption in the country is... cooking related, food related. So it's a big deal, and that is a lot of energy. And you also, look, I'm talking to the home cook that wants to get dinner on the table faster, and you're not just saving energy and saving water, but you're saving time.
Time, exactly.
Because it takes a while for
And we, I when I make pasta at home, it's usually for my wife and me. So it's two of us. And I have a small kind of, I don't know, I guess you'd call it a rice pot or whatever, small size pot you make rice in. not a big pasta pot. And I will often use that a lot for the pasta. And it's definitely the water to pasta ratio is tighter than Lydia would recommend. But what also I like about it, A, it boils quicker. B, the water itself gets starchier, which now we're always talking about, oh, when you're making the pasta sauce, take a ladle of that pasta water and throw it in the pan. And it's a starchier, saltier water that then infuses your sauce with more flavor and viscosity. So I kind of like that byproduct of it.
And that, I mean, that makes, I didn't ever notice that. I don't actually make a lot of pasta in my health, but because I'm trying to eat protein to, you know, you guys can't see me, but I'm just full of muscle.
You're svelte.
I'm so swole. That's a great point. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. The ratio of starch to water is so much higher.
Yeah, it makes a more flavorful pasta water. Yeah. So next video, and this is one that I ponder a lot at home, like even this morning when I was cleaning out my fridge before work, is food waste. And I never, because I feel like I always have leftovers where there's that half bag of greens or something that I never get around to using. And then they start going bad and I end up throwing them down the disposal, and I'm like, what should I have done? Or I don't know. This one confounds me.
It's feel like it's very trendy right now to talk about food waste, and it's what I think the home cook can be doing is to be looking at what restaurants do, because restaurants are so good at not wasting food, because, you know, to be viable, they have to save that food and save that money.
That's their profit margin right there.
So in terms of the greens, especially those like greens you get like in the clamshell, those are always, that's like the toughest thing. The first thing that goes bad and they get all slimy and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I would just like take the thing, the greens you can salvage and saute them. I mean, you can, people don't think about it. You can saute arugula, involve heating them in some way.
Yeah. You know what's good? Anything with oil and garlic is usually good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And a hot oil, right. You could just make a little, warm your oil with the garlic in it and then pour it over the greens, wilt it, it'll be fine.
That'd be good. We did a piece in Bon Appetit, I want to say last month, this pasta article, getting back to pasta, about sort of a clean out your fridge pesto sauce. Where, you know, maybe you're not using basil, but you have a bunch of other greens. You throw them in the blender with your pine nuts and parm and everything, and you can still make a, you know, that sort of thing, which is cool.
We focused on stems in the answers cooking, because that's the thing.
Stems being like parsley stems, cilantro stems,
kale stems, Swiss chard stems. I mean, stems are, you're always being told in recipes to discard the stems, or, you know, people don't think that, you know, the cilantro stems have any flavor or any use. When they're hyper flavorful, you just don't want to chew on them. It's like, we're not cows.
You know, it's interesting though, but I was talking to a chef about this, and we were talking about cilantro versus parsley, and she was saying that she takes the cilantro stems and minces them up really finely like you would chives, and then sprinkles those in a salad for some nice flavor. But I said, well, would you do the same with parsley? She said, not usually with parsley, because parsley stems are thicker and chewier than cilantro. Mm-hmm.
But you can definitely blend the parsley stems into a pesto.
Yeah.
And what Kat Sachs in our test kitchen did, which I thought was brilliant, is with kale stems, she made a kale salad and she took the stems and she put them in the blender with honey and vinegar and oil and made this like kind of creamy dressing with it. So it's really about blending it and just getting it to a good texture. The flavor is there.
Although I think what's interesting about food waste, well, I have a couple more questions. A, not wasting your ingredients at home takes effort and energy. It's like you save that chicken carcass, so you then make chicken stock out of it. You use half those greens, but then you make a pesto two nights later. That also implies that you're home cooking regularly.
That you're cooking 90.
Yeah, you're cooking 90, which you did, which was what, 3 meals a day in a month.
Yeah,
every day.
Right, I do it right. It does imply that you're gonna be home to use that stuff, and you have.
And I'll be honest with you, as like, you know, Mr. New York guy, I go out a lot or order in or come home late, and I'm not cooking every night. My wife is, you know, busy also, and like that's where a lot of my challenge comes from, using those half used ingredients. But I do think there's a lot of interesting ways to use those ingredients as long as you have the time to do so.
Well, can I just point out one thing, and that the reason we cover food waste so much at Epicurious is because it's not because we think we're like an environmental magazine or anything. It's because when you think about food waste, you become a better cook. When you are cognizant of it, you become nimbler and faster and more creative in the kitchen. And so my answer to someone who goes out to eat a lot and like you just said, is, well, as long as you know the things that in your pantry that preserve foods, salt, oil, sugar, the freezer, you can work that out. And so it's just about like just being, just turning on that one little switch about just paying a little bit more attention.
Yeah.
And you become somebody who's like, oh, I can, you know, then you, that might even like spark you going into like making kimchi and making, you know, making
you become a more creative, proactive cook. And, you know, we've both written about things like Parmesan broth. You take all those old Parmesan rinds and you make a broth out of that, which is certainly great if you're a vegetarian and you have a substitute, a very rich umami-packed broth that's a perfect sub for chicken stock.
Okay, we were just talking about this in our meeting, though. Do you eat the Parmesan rind after you've boiled it?
When it's all kind of gooey and rubbery? Mm-hmm. I do not. Is that like a thing? Is that like eating like the at the bottom of the mezcal, eating the worm sort of thing?
I think so. I mean, someone in my test kitchen chops it up into kind of dices it after that and puts it back in the soup, and you get these kind of like little chewy, gooey things.
It's like Parmesan gummy bears.
Yeah. Now, I have accidentally, you know, taken the immersion blender, forgot that the parm was in there, and I was making a blended soup, and accidentally blended it into the soup, and I'm still alive. So,
okay. All right.
I think it can be done, but yeah. I have advocates for it in my kitchen.
Speaking of blending, this is one where you're going to get some gruff from me. The burger. You have a burger episode on The Answer is Cooking. And
this was our issue about cows.
Yeah.
And cows are the literal worst. I mean, cows are the worst. Cows, I mean, they take up so much land. I mean, forests cleared so that we can just put some cows on it. Take up so much water, 3 times more water to produce beef than chicken. The James Beard Foundation started a campaign maybe a year or two ago about blended burgers. So, you know, taking the mushrooms or taking some sort of vegetable and doing half beef, half vegetable, and then thereby you're, you know, cutting the emissions and the water used in land that's in your burger in half. I think that's a great solution. I'm not telling you not to eat beef.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, I guess the question is this, because I mean, it's also interesting now as it dovetails with these times where there's so many good veggie burger options out there available at restaurants, and everyone's sort of coming up with their cool version of a veggie burger and doing so pretty successfully. And also, I think sometimes a lot of, with the certain types of burgers, it's equally about the condiments and the toppings as it is the burger.
Yeah.
But, and the Epi Test Kitchen, what is that good ratio? What is that good mix that still makes a satisfying burger? Did you test some?
Yeah, I think you really want to go for mushrooms, because mushrooms can kind of get that beefy, caramelized flavor. And you're sauteing them, and you're adding, you can, you know, add Worcestershire to that.
So what do you, say you buy some button mushrooms, cremini mushrooms,
and
saute them until they get kind of brown and caramelly with some onions or...
What I would do, I don't like dealing with prepping mushrooms, so I would just put it in the food processor and blitz it a little bit just to get it chopped up, put it in with some onion or garlic, whatever you want, the Worcestershire, you could use fish sauce, anything to add like a little more umami there, and then get that nice and caramelized, and then you just literally take your raw beef, let it cool, the mushrooms cool a little bit, and then mix it with the raw beef and make your patty. That's it. And you know, you could do it.
Blend it throughout. You're not like filling the middle of the burger.
No, you're not filling the middle. You're just treating the mushrooms as if it were ground beef.
Yeah.
So I think that you're going to get the best results there. I mean, think of all the burgers you've had that have been topped with sauteed mushrooms.
Okay, last video from the Answer is Cooking series, which you mentioned earlier about energy and how much energy we consume in the kitchen, and is there a way to consume less? And obviously, if there's hundreds of millions of people in the United States and we each consume a little less, it adds up.
Yeah, and that's the point with all of these.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to save the earth by making one blended burger, you know?
But if we all make blended burgers.
Right. Now it will go viral and the earth will be saved. This one is my favorite one because, you know, we do a lot of preheating when we're cooking. We get these ovens up. I'm so guilty of this. Whenever I'm baking anything, I turn it on first thing and I let it preheat for like 30 minutes. I mean, that's, I'm killing, while, I am the
while,
single.
While you're taking a long hot shower.
Yes,
you're wasting right. all sorts of
I
water.
I take a long bath, yeah. then I shower after the bath, and then I start baking. So, you know, it's really about using small electric appliances yep. when you can, slow cooker. I mean, I'm sort of feeling lately like I am very remiss in not having an Instant Pot in my kitchen or a,
Instant
Pot?
What is that?
It's this appliance. I believe it's from Japan.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, it's a pressure, electric pressure cooker that also has a sautéing capacity.
Hmm.
And it's like got this cult audience. Like
wow.
it's a very cultured thing. People love it. And you can do everything.
I'm feeling pretty left out right now.
I feel left out too. So anyway, I feel like pressure cookers and slow cookers are very hot right now.
They're small, they're efficient.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots of stuff you can do. I don't own either. And so if I did, I would be cutting my emissions in my
kitchen. Food director Carla Lolly Music is a big pressure cooker fan, and she does beans in there, and she has all sorts of stuff. She's constantly praising the pressure cooker.
The beans are the main. Like you can do like beans, and apparently they come out incredibly creamy in 16 minutes.
Yeah, in a quarter of the time. Mm-hmm. Rice cooker, the most efficient, best way to cook rice, and also you get better rice than you're ever going to get in a pot.
You know, cultures that really use a lot of rice don't understand why anybody would not use a rice cooker. So.
Two other things. Three other things. One is the hot water heater, which is now like everyone. I feel like everyone's got the hot water pitcher that you put on. Yeah, put on
Very
the
British.
Little on the disc that just you plug in and mm-hmm. it's like at a rapid boil in mm-hmm. like a minute. My wife uses it every morning for tea and coffee and stuff. We have one here in the office. I'm a big fan. I need to get one because I don't have one at the moment of the toaster oven, because a lot of times I'm in your same boat where like I have one child, I'm making him some like chicken tenders, and I'm heating mm-hmm. up the entire oven to 425 degrees mm-hmm. to put one little tray in there. I'm like, that's insane. Like,
yeah,
the amount of energy that's taking in time. Again, it's time. It's like, you don't only take to heat a full-size oven to 425. You're like, really? It's like the little light, I'm not there yet. I haven't preheated it yet. My kid's bouncing off the walls and wants dinner. That's annoying. And then finally, you mentioned the broiler, which I'm a big broiler guy. What about broiling?
Well, broiling, I mean, there's no preheating with the broiling because it's instantly, the flame is there.
It's a ceiling of flame.
So, right. So your food is so close to it, you don't need to preheat it. And it cooks very quickly. So, I mean, for little things like fish.
Yeah.
I think we've done chicken cutlets in there, like kind of breaded. Fish is the best thing. I think you do just put a little. Actually, what I like to do is take any fish fillet, especially like a salmon or something, mustard, something like creamy on top. It gets mm-hmm. a little mm-hmm. half creamy, half gets a little crust on it. Chicken cutlets that have been breaded, you just like kind of flip them. Those are done in like, 7 minutes, I think. You can do steak, but I'm not a big steak guy.
Would you broil your steak?
No,
yeah. Well, growing up, my mom was a big broiler. She would do fish now and then, but she would always do like broiled lamb chops, broiled
yeah,
meat.
For
like,
sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, like, for so any that they, meat,
if,
really.
Especially if they're thin, you just want that intense heat that's going to get the tops nice and crispy, and you flip them over and you're done. And I think there's a lot of things like that. What's interesting about the answer is cooking is the answer is right there in front of you.
Yeah, it's right. It is right there. Exactly. Well, I was just going to mention one thing for people who are not meat eaters. We do kind of thick eggplant steaks in the broiler. We found that, and we have a recipe on the site for making like subs out of like kind of like a meaty vegetarian sub out of that. But vegetables, some vegetables are really good for the broiler too. Not all of them.
All right. The answer is cooking. Check out the video series, a very cool animated video series that David narrates on epicurious.com. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by Carrie Polis, Emma Wertzman, and Lily Sherman, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Plus, we're also offering a deal with our podcast listeners. Go to bonappetit.com/gift to see what we have. Thanks for listening.